I'm sorry, I'm drinking your tea.
You're drinking my tea.
I'm drinking your tea. Well, I'm so sorry.
I hope you enjoy
my tea. It was very nice.
Welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. Graham is not with us. One of the reasons I think why we weren't around last week is because Graham wasn't here, frankly.
He wasn't cracking the whip, was he?
He wasn't cracking the whip. He wasn't corralling us together. So it's me, Terry, and Jan Bilton here.
Hello.
And we're going to talk about England in a second, but we do love hearing from listeners.
We do.
It's a fairly recent thing for us.
Hmm.
When I should say, make the mistake of talking and opining on matters Australian football.
Yes.
There's no shortage of Australian football fans to correct me where I'm wrong. And quite right too,
yes,
I should point
yes.
out. Quite yeah. right too. They are perfectly entitled to pull up and correct, and they do so in the right spirit, in the spirit of conversation and enrichment,
yes.
and thank you for that. And particular thanks to Dan Kirai, or Dan Kirai, who I can only hope is related to Gabor Kirai, but I don't know whether or not he is.
Who's Gabor Kirai?
The Hungarian goalkeeper who used to play for Crystal Palace, the chap who used to wear the sweatpants. You remember Gabor
Kirai? Oh, yeah.
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 Thank you, Dan, very much for the message that you sent us to our Facebook page. It was a fairly lengthy missive, so we won't go into it. But it's correcting me on the Telstra Dome, which is now quite rightly named the Etihad Stadium. But it does refer the instance that I refer to. Let's burn down the Telstra Dome was indeed a thing that happened 2008. It was a dispute between Melbourne Victory fans and the Telstra Dome, and not Sydney FC fans, as I said. So I do apologise. That's a pretty crappy mistake to make. But nevertheless,
it's a long way away. So from this distance,
from here, it's a long way away. But I mean, it is kind of like, you know, mistaking Newcastle for something.
Yes,
so I do appreciate that. It's not an ideal thing. But there it is. But the original article from which I based it is on pitchinvasion.net. So if you type in pitch invasion and Melbourne fans, you'll probably find it in Google. All good stuff. We also received some wonderful pictures from Chris Cooler. Still don't know if we're pronouncing that name right. Must be the fourth time we've mentioned his name on the podcast.
We should just try it differently every week.
Maybe we just will. Yeah, just see.
Even if he corrects
until we get to the point. We'll hopefully get to the point. I'm like, for God's sake, man, it's, you know, and then we'll you know, he'll let us know. Well, and also we're assuming it's a he as well. Chris could.
That is true.
Indeed. So, Chris, that could you do true. Us a favour? Tell us how to pronounce your name, and if you choose to, could you please express your gender? Anyway, yes, he, she, or Z posted some fantastic pictures from the wedding, from the Western Sydney Wanderers derby game against Sydney FC. The tifos that were set up by the Western Sydney Wanderers fans were really impressive.
They're spectacular. Really good.
Fantastic. And what a superb club WSW is. A great addition to the A League. Good club, and were managed by Tony Popovich. Another Crystal Palace legend.
They get everywhere, don't they?
They do get everywhere.
Like rats.
I know. Well, I mean, there's one on the screen as we speak, which I think is a quite nice segue.
Yes.
Into one Gareth Southgate, who is another Crystal Palace legend.
Yes.
I know he's probably better remembered for his time at Aston Villa.
Yeah.
And I think that in truth, that is where he did most of his best work.
Yes.
And that's where he earned his caps as well as an England player. But I mean, he is remembered. He made it. I remember watching his league debut. One of the best goals I've ever seen scored by a Crystal Palace player was scored by Gareth Southgate. Shall I tell you about it?
Please do.
It's against Portsmouth, and it's a second.
That's got to feel good as well.
Yeah. It was against Portsmouth on a sunny August afternoon. Third game into the season, we'd been relegated the season before. Gareth Southgate was a central midfielder. Back then, not a centre half, as he went on to become, and he picked up the ball from the right back position, and he went on a mazy run all the way up the field.
Right, okay.
And he had a reputation for liking a shot from distance, didn't he?
Yeah.
But the problem was that he wasn't always terribly good at it. And when they went in, it was a joyous thing. It was a thing to celebrate because it was such a rarity.
Yeah.
But he had Paul Williams, who was a fine striker, on one side. And on the other side, supporting him, was Chris Armstrong. And these two went on to score a barrel load of goals in that season. Yeah. And he's like, give the ball to Williams, give it to whoever, whatever preference you were.
Yeah.
What you weren't exhorting him to do was to take a shot himself. Because he thought, well, he won't score, he'll miss. He's in a brilliant position. He's on this fantastic run, lung-bursting run. He's never going to do it. What does he do? He larrups it in from about 30 yards.
Like an exorcist.
Yeah, and I was right behind it.
Really?
Right in front of the home stand.
Oh,
and
wow.
We went absolutely mad. Yeah, absolutely mad. It was a wonderful moment. And I have nothing but good thoughts for Gareth Southgate.
I think he's generally well thought of.
Yeah.
And his character is never in question. Well, not when the press get all of it.
But I think he's a bit rough, isn't he?
He's
taking over England at a difficult time.
Yes, he is.
Is
there ever a good time to take over England?
I mean, I think there may have been good times in the past, but at the moment, I mean, it is fair to say that this England team is pretty poor. Yeah, and what point do you think, you know, English fans, England fans, have to really have a strong word with themselves about what their expectations are for this England team, of it?
Well, I'm not sure whether the problem sits with England fans or whether they are unduly influenced by the press, because, you know, we talked about this when we've talked about this recently with the when we talked about the England manager's job and it being quite almost a political appointment. It's almost like one of the most important jobs in the country, or it's seen like that. I don't think it is. Football's not the most important thing in the country, certainly not at the moment anyway.
No.
But it is a pretty high level role. And the England manager and the England team come in for such criticism or such heavy scrutiny that I think that you could probably put out, and we have put out some wonderful teams in the past, and they've always just failed to succeed. And I think there's a pressure there that comes from, maybe it's a dynamic that's in the players, maybe it's the press, maybe it's a bit of history, maybe it's a bit of national, our own national kind of feeling, if you like, our own arrogance that we should beat everyone. I mean, we used to run the world, for God's sake, and we invented football.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much that still.
Do you think it's imperialism? Do you think there's an element of imperialism?
You know, the one thing that sticks in my mind about Stanley Matthews' book, which is probably in one of your shelves here somewhere, is he was stunned by the arrogance of the FA back in his day, which of course was before before there was a World Cup, certainly before England had won it, because the prevailing view then with the FA was that England were the best team in the world, and why did they need to come prove it in any kind of tournament?
No.
And I wonder whether there's still a little, maybe not as brazen as that, but I wonder whether there's still a little bit of that feeling that floats around.
Mm.
And I think there is probably a bit of imperialism as well. I think our past leads us down that path as well. And then the press jump on top of that, and when we can't deliver on those impossible expectations, they crucify the team. They crucify individuals. Rooney's not necessarily getting the best treatment at the moment, which I'm sure we'll go into. Sam was a very naughty boy and probably got what he deserved. In fact, he did get what he deserved. It was difficult for football to answer its critics on its reputation for corruption, and then have the head man behaving like that. But you know, the press took great pleasure in reveling in that. I think that the reveal from was the Telegraph, wasn't it? I thought was quite dignified the way that they brought that out, even though we missed it because we were recording.
We were recording.
That night.
Yeah.
I didn't think there was any kind of it wasn't like a kind of Sun headline, was it? But then the Red Tops did go for it.
Yeah.
But the reason why I went for the press straight away is because Southgate was effectively in the job for hours before, I think it was the Mirror printed something about him being involved in a tax avoidance scheme, which is completely legal, I have to say. So he's invested his money apparently somewhere. But, I mean, that was... He's a caretaker manager. And that's the level of scrutiny he gets from, you know, some rag. So there is... Sorry, the very long answer to whether there is too much expectation is that there are so many forces, I think, pressing down on these players. There's probably... You know, money and success as well, which has got a bit to play as well.
There was a discussion on Sunday Supplement. I don't know if you watch Sunday Supplement, which is a Sunday morning talk show on Sky Sports. They were talking about the comparison between the amount of pressure that the England players are under and the Wales players are under, and that when the Welsh national team or Welsh national team players or management make a mistake, it's not really regarded as being a big deal.
Yeah.
But if a similar mistake was to be made by anyone on the England side, there would be, you know, chaos. There'd be a massive pile on.
Yeah.
And I sort of was listening to this and thinking, well, you know, you seem to be completely unaware that actually, as prominent members of the English press, you are responsible for that pylon and for that happening.
Yes, completely.
You know, media hyperbole and media and press scandals and panics.
Yeah.
Well, not scandals, but panics. They're not an event occurring in nature. And they're not necessarily orchestrated, but they do happen because people choose for them to happen.
Yes.
You don't have to write all of that. I got into a conversation on Twitter about this with Steve and George, and one of them pointed out that the population size of England is so much bigger than Wales, much bigger than Scotland, that this is where the big drive is for clicks and newspaper sales and advertising sales. That really, you know, that's why the England team get more scrutiny than the Welsh team, even though at the moment it's the Welsh team who are probably up there to be shot at, because they quite clearly...
Yeah.
You know, head and shoulders better than England.
Yeah.
And probably will be for a while.
Regarding the population size of England compared to Wales or Wales or Scotland. But it was interesting what you said about where all the clicks are and where there's a bigger pot of gold to aim for is with England. Press can really anger me a lot because they do dictate what people think and feel. And a lot of people are, and I'm probably the worst at it. I'm quite happy to be. I get swept along, as a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And you don't question it, and suddenly you're part of this tide of emotion, and it ends up with some very bad decisions being made, or some very bad opinions being drawn. And I think that, you know, what you see with Wales and Northern Ireland. And the Republic, to a certain extent, certainly in the Euros, was that because they don't have that, that people really get behind them. In fact, you know, I'm an English person, very much behind Wales and Northern Ireland and the Republic, and want to see them do well. Because maybe, you know, you're not being told that they're overpaid, fat superstars, you know, having sex with two prostitutes at a time in some London hotel, and then betting on their own games. and some of those are just one person.
I think the other thing to consider is that in mitigation for the press is that when the Premier League stops, when the international break comes along, the Premier League stops, again, for the reason that we just outlined, you know, England is pretty much the only game in town when it comes to football coverage. So all of the column inches and all of the space that had been previously allocated for Premier League football is now free and needs to be filled with other content. And so the only other content really is the England national team.
Yeah.
So the onus, therefore, is on the press to fill that space. Now, they may well end up filling it. I'm not necessarily referring to scandals, because they tend to be the preserve of different departments within like, you know, no one from the Telegraph sports team orchestrated the sting against Big Sam. So they still have to go out there looking for more football content. I'm reminded of that time when Raheem Sterling was left out because he was tired during the World Cup Euro qualifiers, rather. And it was such a big thing, when in fact really wasn't a big thing at all.
Yeah.
Not to my mind, anyway.
Yeah.
It wasn't really a big thing, you know. And I think that it was just simply that, well, look, you know, this is something that we can talk about at length and at some depth, you know, and until the Premier League starts around again the following Wednesday.
How does it work in Germany? That's a very successful footballing nation with a mostly proud history. The expectation on them from their press must be huge.
It is, yeah, and the standards that of character set for the players is also very high. And I mean, I don't think it's quite as intense and hyperbolic as it is in England, but I don't think it's very far off it, to be honest. And certainly players are quite able, if when they are scandalised, it is all over the tabloid press in there, so that, and is considered to be a matter of great national interest. And national interest is, of course, the other thing. I mean, you're talking about Gareth Southgate being in the Mirror only a few hours after having been given the caretaker manager job for the so-called tax evasion.
Yeah.
Again, worth stressing, perfectly legal and legitimate things that he's done. But this notion that there is an element of public interest in the England manager's activities is a strange one, because he's a football coach.
Yes.
I mean, he doesn't draw any money from the taxpayer. He's not involved in anything. It's not like he's a judge or a magistrate.
No.
He's not an MP or a lord, or he's not a chairman of a public utility, or a bank or something like that.
He couldn't sign the back of your passport for it.
No, he couldn't. No, yeah. You're absolutely right. And so where is the public interest, I wonder, in that? I mean, and this links to Sam.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, is there a public interest element to the England manager being dodgy? Do we need to know that? Do we as fans need to know that?
It appears that there is a public interest, and certainly that's what
But I don't mean, when I say public interest, I don't mean as interest from the public. Public interest in that it is in our interest to know this thing because these people are important. So when an MP does a dodgy deal with a bank, that is in the public interest because that MP is paid for by taxpayers. They're voted in but when an England coach does something dodgy, is that in the public interest?
I think that with Sam, that's quite a unique one, isn't it? Because that was abusing his position to make money. So it seems, allegedly, we can cover all that in all sorts of stuff to protect my house. I think in that case, then definitely it's in the public interest and it should be exposed. And I think that the journalist who did the right thing, and I thought it was a pretty good piece of journalism as well, for what I know. But when it comes to what he gets up to when maybe his wife's not around, which Bobby Robson had to go through, which I don't even know if it was true or not, I can remember now, Sven went through, then no, it's probably not in the public interest. No. That is just scandalising it. But then in between those two things is this thing that that Glenn Hoddle said, which was just horrible. It was neither his own private conduct, financial or bedroom related.
No.
But he did say some pretty horrible things, and therefore it should be open scrutiny.
Yeah, so I think that your private affairs, such as, your sexual matters.
Yes.
These are private.
Yeah.
I think if you express a view, a political view or a view about certain type of people as a prominent voice within a sport, that I think that there is a dimension of public interest. And I think, just to put my opinion across, I think that also if you are the England coach and you are seen to be breaking your employer's own rules, and those rules particularly are in regards to conduct, then I think that is the public interest dimension.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think if an England manager is having an affair with their secretary, that is a private matter and of no concern. If an England manager is using legitimate means to avoid paying income tax, that may be distasteful in many people's eyes, but are still, for me, a private matter.
Yeah.
But I think if they're saying that you're going to go, that you were a bad person in a previous life, if you're disabled, and that I think that if you're offering to do speaking tours for hundreds of thousands of pounds in clear violation of your employer's own rules, then that is, that I think that definitely falls on the other side of the line.
Yeah.
I think we can draw a kind of line there for our moral compass, can't we?
Yeah,
so I think so. We can conclude from there that Southgate and Robson have been treated poorly.
Yeah, well, it appears so far. We don't know what we don't know about.
We don't know. We're only basing this on what we don't know.
I mean, as we speak, there could be something horrible breaking.
Got to be careful with the quiet ones as well. You never know. Yeah.
I mean,
it's just as we're recording this, the game England were playing Slovenia, and it's just finished 0-0. I've been focusing, looking into your lovely eyes for the last half an hour, and I didn't notice when you came on, but I noticed that Wayne Rooney had come on.
Do you think that the word dropped is appropriately used when a player is still in the squad for the game and has every chance, in fact, did feature in the game? I thought that was a really...
Yeah, it's
everyone
difficult.
Used that today, and I was thinking, he hasn't really been dropped, has he?
I think it's an accurate term.
You do?
I can understand where you're coming from, because the connotations of the term mean that he's been cut, that it's that you know, he suffered a humiliation, or he suffered a personal defeat. I mean, you could say he was left out. How would you characterise what's happened to Wayne Rooney?
Well, I just think that there was a justification. They did feel like they had to justify it, because they held a press conference so the manager of the national team could explain why a member of his team was going to be on the bench rather than the pitch to the start of the game. I mean, to be honest with you, it was quite bizarre, because the way it was carried out was... it was all very sensible and grown up, and it was fine. And Gareth Southgate, he seems to be, quite articulate, and he just got across his point. He said it's nothing to do with his performance in the previous game. We've just got a different opposition, and we think that we need to deploy some different personnel.
If Wayne Rooney is trying to convert and reinvent himself as a central midfielder at this point in your career, then you do have to acknowledge that someone's going to have to say, "Look, sorry, mate, but I need more well-rounded midfielders, whatever, or people who offer a different option."
Yeah, absolutely.
And you should expect to get dropped. That situation is weird. I'm one of those people who feel that he probably should have retired after Euro 2016.
Yeah. Do what Shearer did.
And do what Shearer did, and focus on his club career and developing.
I agree.
I'm also of the view that he should still try and make it as a striker, and if necessary, move on.
Yeah.
That is purely an observational view. I mean, Wayne Rooney knows his body and his setup a lot better than I do, and so I'll defer to his judgment as to what he thinks is the right thing to do. But
I think it's really strange on that point, though. Because Mourinho came into the role and said, he's not a central midfielder for me. Although he stopped short saying, I only want to play him as a striker. I ain't playing him in the middle of the park.
No.
He's gone up front, that's his job. And, Sam, you could argue, maybe dodge that decision. And just let him play where he wants, as you said, which I know
he
we've
gone
through.
He gave him a free roll, didn't he?
Yeah, possibly a bit too free. I don't know, anyway, that's water under the bridge. But now Southgate's come in, and I think maybe you can just go in there and go, look, I've got four goals at this. And if I get it right, great. If I don't, then I can go back into a job that I'm doing very, very well in.
Yeah, and he is doing a very good job with the
under-21s. 80% wins.
Yeah.
80% of the games he's won.
Well,
incredible.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't talked about England's youth, and we won't do on this one. But, I mean, England, at all levels, at the youth level, are doing very well.
Yeah.
Which is encouraging, but then that would then bring us into conversations about... going into Premier League matches, into the Premier League clubs, and how much game time are they going to get? Are they going to be able to kick on? But that is a whole other podcast.
That's a pod on its own, isn't it?
There was an awful lot of focus during the anthems and in the build up just before kickoff. Rooney had his own cameraman. Rooney Cam was there, and ITV, and I assume it's ITV's probably coverage, although the game is in Slovenia, cutting to him, and even during lulls during the first half, they were cutting to Rooney sat on the bench, and this speaks to the theory that people are more interested in stuff that goes around the pitch rather than what goes on the pitch.
Yeah,
but I think it's a really rubbish way to treat someone who he's our top scorer. He is England's captain. He's our captain. He's a veteran, and I think he deserves a little bit better treatment than this kind of this kind of sort of like, let's all, you know, voyeuristic kind of like, let's all watch for Wayne Rooney to scowl or look unhappy or look mopey. Let's try and, you know, and it's all a bit, I personally find that quite creepy.
Yeah, it is. And as well as that, you're broadcasting a sporting event. So yeah. Your job is to put out there some pleasing content on a game of football,
yeah,
and not on the soap opera around it.
It does speak to the whole lunacy of the England captaincy role, its elevated status in this country. Again, we're so good at ceremony, but
we're like leaders here.
Yeah, but we don't. But no, without substance. You know, I mean, the England captain is this exalted position, but we're rubbish. We're a second rate.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if we're lucky, we're good as Sweden.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's actually nothing wrong with that.
Mm.
But part of our malaise is that we elevate, you know, these people, when these players, when they don't necessarily deserve that.
That's an English thing, isn't it? Look at the way this entire society is structured.
Yeah, yeah, no, it is totally an English thing. It's not just a football thing.
Yeah, yeah.
No, absolutely. I think it probably speaks to it.
You know, we are, yeah, we have you know, one monarch, one leader, one England manager, one England captain.
We love our icons. We're not the only country in culture that does that, but I mean, it's something that, you know, that we're really badly into.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I think a lot of problems would be solved if we didn't have that. Yeah. But I certainly think that we might be a slightly better team of individual players if we left a lot of that behind us. I think about Wayne Rooney and I think him as a club captain, a veteran club captain who's passed his best, but still offers a great deal in the dressing room.
Well, that's what Shearer did back in the day, because he wanted to take control of that situation and not have him someone that was won't he play for the England team, and just said that's it.
Mm.
And he was, I remember, and he still actually maintains that kind of, because he's commented quite publicly about Wayne Rooney and said that he should just retire and concentrate on your day job.
I know, but isn't that a shame though? Shouldn't England players feel that they have the freedom to play when they're picked and not freak out when they get dropped? Yeah, because I there were times actually later on when Shearer, I thought, could have returned to the England side.
Yeah.
Especially if we had, I mean, there was one time I remember when we had a bit of an injury crisis. And he could have definitely done the job for us. He was still banging him in and he didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
And I just think, well, that's because you made such a big statement about leaving in the first place. I mean, can't players just gradually wind down their careers? Why do they have to retire, you know? Why do we have to have a press conference when a football player decides he doesn't want to play for
them? Yeah, I know. You're right. But one thing that I would imagine, if I was Alan Shearer, I wouldn't want to... There's one thing, when you say something like that, that is it for me, or I'm doing this then.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big risk there, because you kind of make yourself a hostage to fortune. And he stuck by what he said. Rooney, on the other hand, had said after the Euros, I'm going to play for England, and providing I'm picked, until Russia.
Yeah.
2018.
Right.
So
maybe that's what he'll do then.
So he's already made himself... he's already put that line in the sand. That's as far as I'm going. And if he does, good luck to him.
Yeah.
But I think that for him to now go, I've had one knockback on one game, where the manager has publicly said it's nothing to do with your form in the last game.
Yeah. I'm making a tactical change.
Yeah,
and
it's
you're
my
not
tactics.
Part of it,
but
yeah.
For some reason, some bizarre reason, I feel it necessary to sit here and tell the world's media.
Yeah.
I mean, when he was explaining that. One of the reasons why I called out how eloquent Gareth Southgate was is because the noise of clicking cameras.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy. It was like almost like the you know what's happening in America with the debates.
Yeah.
Just the press would just flash, 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 flash.
But
flash.
They're going to crucify him now, aren't they, Southgate, for not leaving, for not picking Rooney.
Yeah.
I mean, people will now say that's the reason why England didn't win.
Yeah.
This game is because Rooney didn't start.
Yeah.
And they're going to say that it's Southgate's fault.
Yeah. You lost it in midfield, and the rest of them will say you lost it up front.
Yeah.
And Rooney actually sits there, and he's probably going to feel worse than Southgate would if that
it's
was coming
It's conceivable,
across.
Yeah. I mean, I like to think that Rooney is a pro
and
will take disappointment like a pro.
Yeah.
And acknowledge that that it's the manager's cock on the block.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe what you should do is to say, look, you should give the captain's armband to a regular.
Yeah.
But I will play when I'm picked. So don't you worry about it. You include me in the squad or you don't include me in the squad. When my name is called, I will be there. But if you don't call my name, I'm not going to kick up fast.
I think also part of the issue that links into this is that Rooney's the kind of last superstar. And it doesn't look like there's any others on the horizon. Maybe Sterling might jump into that one.
Maybe Rashford. We've got a long way to go.
We're scratching around for names, aren't we? It's not like when he arrived, it was him when Michael Owen arrived to an extent with Gerrard and
the
Lampard,
golden generation.
You know, all of those guys.
He's the last of the golden generation, isn't he?
I suppose so. Yeah, even though I suppose he came in towards the latter part of that. I don't know, but. So there's no megastars in that team anymore, really. Or there's certainly no. You know, their job is now a megastar. He's currently a megastar. There's guys that might, as we've said, might get to that level where they are either famous in their own right, or they are, you know, they are regarded as really, you know, world class players. But maybe there's a bit of us hanging on to. He's all we've got left. We've just got an ordinary team of fine players. Don't get me wrong, but is there anyone there that's got that little bit of sparkle, that brilliance? You know, we haven't got a Ronaldo in the team, for example.
No, we haven't got a Bale.
No,
we haven't got a Bale. I think we'll leave it there. Yeah, and thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
Great pleasure to have you in another, not a studio, admittedly, it's my office, but it's been great to have you here. From me, Terry DeFellin, and from Jan Bilton, it's goodbye.
Goodbye. Distracted by that spider.
What spider?
That spider there keeps crawling towards me, and then sure he'll be fine. He might live it.
Do you not like spiders?
Well, I'm all right with them, as a, you know. But I just see him keep anyway. What was I saying?